Nights at the Circus, written by Angela Carter and read by Adjoa Ando.
Part 1. London. Chapter 1.
"Lor love you, sir,"
Feathers sang out in a voice that clanged like dustbins.
"As to my place of birth, why, I first saw light of day right here in smoky old London, didn't I? Not build the Cockney Venus for nothing, sir, though they could just as well have called me Helen of the High Wire, due to the unusual circumstances in which I come ashore. For I never docked via what you might call the normal channel, sir. Oh, dear me, no. But just like Helen of Troy was hatched. Hatched out of a bloody great egg while Bow Bells rang as ever is."
The blonde guffawed uproariously, slapped the marbly thigh on which her wrap fell open, and flashed a pair of vast blue indecorous eyes at the young reporter with his open notebook and his poised pencil, as if to dare him.
"Believe it or not?"
Then she spun round on her swivelling dressing stool. It was a plush-top backless piano stool, lifted from the rehearsal room, and confronted herself with a grin in the mirror as she ripped 6 inches of false lash from her left eyelid with an incisive gesture and a small explosive rasping sound. Feathers, the most famous aerialiste of the day. Her slogan, "Is she fact or is she fiction?" And she didn't let you forget it for a minute. This query, in the French language, in foot-high letters, blazed forth from a wall-sized poster, souvenir of her Parisian triumphs, dominating her London dressing room. Something hectic, something fittingly impetuous and dashing about that poster. The preposterous depiction of a young woman shooting up like a rocket. Whee! In a burst of agitated sawdust towards an unseen trapeze somewhere above in the wooden heavens of the Cirque d'Hiver. The artist had chosen to depict her ascent from behind. Bums aloft, you might say. Up she goes, in a steatopygus perspective, shaking out about her those tremendous red and purple pinions, pinions large enough, powerful enough, to bear up such a big girl as she. And she was a big girl. Evidently, this Helen took after her putative father, the swan, around the shoulder parts. But these notorious and much debated wings, the source of her fame, were stowed away for the night, under the soiled quilting of her baby blue satin dressing gown, where they made an uncomfortable-looking pair of bulges, shuddering the surface of the taut fabric from time to time, as if desirous of breaking loose. "How does she do that?" pondered the reporter.
"In Paris, they called me L'Ange Anglaise, the English angel. Not English, but an angel, as the old saint said," she'd told him, jerking her head at that favourite poster, which she'd remarked offhandedly, had been scrawled on the stone by some frog dwarf who asked me to piddle on his thingy before he'd get his crayon so much as out, sparing your blushes. Then, "A touch of sham?"
She'd popped the cork of a chilled magnum of champagne between her teeth. A hissing flute of bubbly stood beside her own elbow on the dressing table, the still crepitating bottle lodged negligently in the toilet jug, packed in ice that must have come from a fishmonger's, for a shiny scale or two stayed trapped within the chunks. And this twice-used ice must surely be the source of the marine aroma, something fishy about the Cockney Venus, that underlay the hot, solid composite of perfume, sweat, grease paint, and raw leaking gas that made you feel you'd breathed the air in Feather's dressing room in lumps. One lash off, one lash on, Feathers leaned back a little to scan the asymmetric splendour reflected in her mirror with impersonal gratification.
"And now," she said, "after my conquest on the continent," which she pronounced continent, "here's the prodigal daughter home again to London, my lovely London that I love so much. London, as dear old Dan Leno calls it. A little village on the Thames of which the principal industries are the music hall and the confidence trick."